me tell you who's doing sneakers the best in the game right now. That's New Balance. The two-way V4, featuring this groundbreaking use of technology with fresh foam. It's called Fuel Cell, creating this combination that we love of rebound and cushioning. Fresh foam offers unparalleled cushioning for maximum comfort your entire game from start to finish. The upper construction features this lightweight textile that reduces weight, which we all need, I know I do, while remaining supportive and breathable. Hard to find that combo. The two-way V4 gives you the tools that you need to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way V4 at newbalance.com. Robin Lundberg. Robin joined my show BetMGM tonight, which airs 7 to 11 Eastern Standard Time, Monday through Friday. I was joined by my co-host, Nick Ashew, and my friend, that little motherfucker, PJ Glasser. Let's listen in. Very few people in the league see it like Robin.
When you see this, when you hear these stories, do you look at this and say, okay, it's a team that's struggling a little bit and this is what's coming out? Or does it feel like it's maybe something bigger, like the Darvin Ham era is, crazy enough, already unraveling in L.A.?
Well, I mean, look, they won the in-season tournament. There's right. a banner and everything. So why are we worried about this right now? You know, I said it at the time, and I was only half joking, that LeBron and the Lakers need to go as hard as they possibly can for the in-season tournament because, you know, they are – their roster is not that talented from top to bottom when you look at it. They really don't have shooting. They've got Torian Prince playing minutes, guys like that out there playing minutes. LeBron is the oldest player in the league. Anthony Davis, you know, has the street clothes meme going on for him. So counting on those guys to not only be healthy in the playoffs is enough, but also counting on the rest of that talent around them being enough is too much. So I really did think going for the in-season tournament was a really good idea for them. But yeah, I mean, I think once you start seeing stuff like this from Shams and the like, there is smoke to that fire. That they've been in a bit of a tailspin. And we all know the coach is always the easy scapegoat. You know, Rob Lowe, I mean, Rob Pelinka ain't going to get canned, you know, in the middle of the season right now. So it's clearly there's some disconnect, some discontent going on with that team. I mean, it goes back to Austin Reeves and even reports of him having friction with Darvin Ham. And he's probably the third best player on that team. So, yeah, I think the Lakers do have legitimate issues. And roster construction, aside from rotation, is one of them.
Yeah, I think Jeannie is a big part of that, too. Unfortunately, hiring a lot of her friends. I know Linda Rambis is, like, making calls. And, like, I think she was a Laker girl back in, like, the Showtime era. And then her and Kurt just kind of hung around. Emmanuel, quickly, though, near and dear to my heart, Sixth Man of the Year candidate. He probably should have won it last year. He goes to Toronto. Probably going to get the absolute bag. He goes crazy in his starting role, 26 points. How do you think he and RJ affect Toronto moving forward?
Well, quickly needed that sort of change in scenery, I think, because of the conflict with Brunson. I mean, through no fault of his own, those two guys just play the same position. And Brunson is really good. You know, Brunson, aside from his height, it doesn't really get enough credit for what he's actually done with the Knicks and in the league at this point. So quickly was never going to get all the way off the leash with the Knicks just because of that position fit and the fact that you couldn't play those two guys together. So I like that look for Toronto there. RJ Barrett was never that much of an impact player for the Knicks, but maybe back home in Canada, he played well for the national team as well. You know, it's just the kind of thing, perhaps a change of scenery, less expectations will help him out. So Toronto was going really nowhere. There was no reason for them not to take a swing at something that could stick. And it looks so far like the move has been a good fit.
And then on the other side, Robin, I mean, from the Knicks perspective, did you like them trading for OG? And then do you think, like, the Knicks finally have enough now for them to go out in the offseason and attract one of these big free agents?
You know, I think I like the move quite a bit, actually, because, like I just said, that they needed that wing position. Mm-hmm. They had quickly giving them a glut at that guard spot. Now maybe they need a backup there. I think they could use an upgrade at shooting guard. But they had Brunson. They had Randall. OG goes in between. And that's a good fit for them. As far as a big star, I mean, we're so caught. We're almost like trained with muscle memory to do these same exercises in the NBA. You know, they need to get the guy. They got to go get the guy to make the move. I don't know if that's the way that the league is constructed anymore. Every super team that's put together fails now.
Yes.
You know, everyone falls apart at the seams. We're already, like, talking about the demise of the Phoenix Suns. They were just put together. So I don't think we're in that era anymore. In fact, I think one thing – I mean, look at the odds right there on my screen. Look how close and bunched up a lot of those teams are. None of those are super teams per se. I mean, obviously, Milwaukee now has Giannis and Dame. The Celtics have a bunch of guys. But the Heat were in the finals a year ago. No one's calling them a super team. Plus 1,500 looks pretty good to me, given their recent history. So I think the NBA has done a good job at developing parity in a certain sense, where we're now in a world where the Oklahoma City Thunder are all of a sudden contenders. The Minnesota Timberwolves are all of a sudden contenders. You probably could list off 6-8 teams who realistically could at least be in the mix. So I don't think the Knicks have to go out there and land the biggest fish possible. I think they have to continue to build on their roster and improve their personnel, because they aren't that far away. I mean, the Heat, I just mentioned, were in the finals last year. The Knicks went 6 games with them last season without these moves. So I think they keep making those moves around the margins, they could be right in the mix.
Yeah, where do the Knicks stack up to you then? I mean, we haven't seen much, obviously, with this new roster and the way that it's constructed yet. But the East, I mean, I'm looking here. We got the Magic, the Cavs, and the Knicks all sitting there at 19 and 15. And again, look, we got a long season ahead of us. The Magic could fall off, although we've all sat here and talked about how much we like the Magic coming into the season anyway. So fingers crossed it doesn't have, you know, we've got a few bets on that division winner. But, like, it feels like right now we haven't gotten to the point where a lot of teams have truly separated themselves, besides maybe a Boston, but we found moments where Boston's incredibly frustrating too. Like, I kind of feel like the Knicks are in a spot where they could easily climb back up to, like, maybe around like the 4 spot, maybe surpass the Pacers because they're kind of up and down. It just, everything feels very, very wide open right now.
Yeah, man, that was what I was just saying. I think the Knicks are probably the 5th best team in the conference. You know, looking at it on paper, given the Heat, the pedigree points, given Boston and Milwaukee the edge, and then Phillies look really good. That's another team, sneaky team around the deadline. You know, Daryl Morey's always been very aggressive. One move could really put the Sixers over the top, though. I'm not a big believer in Embiid when it comes to the postseason, just because he's usually broken down around that point in time, and he doesn't get the same calls. Generational flopper for a big man. But, you know, when the reffing gets a little tighter. But, I'd say the Knicks are right in that group of teams. Again, they were there last year. My stock line used to be that the Knicks have won one playoff series since I graduated from high school. That is no longer true, because they won a playoff series a year ago. So that's now 2 playoff series since I graduated from high school. And if they could win a playoff series, who's to say they can't win 2 with a slight improvement like they just made? I wouldn't be shocked if the Knicks are in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Especially now that they have some guys, or at least a guy in OG Anunoby, who's a really good corner catch-and-shoot, 3-point shooter. We saw what happened against the Miami Heat when they stopped being able to score from deep. They just packed the paint on them. I do want to get your thoughts on the Brooklyn Nets. And I know it's not a sexy team to talk about, but they're fascinating because they're hanging around. They have reasons to compete. I mean, you would imagine they don't own their own draft picks due to the trades that they've made. And yet, they seem already to be punting on the season, especially that game right around the Christmas break against Milwaukee, where Jacques Vaughn sat everyone for absolutely no reason against a packed house.
That was the move a contender makes, which was strange. You know, the reason that game stood out was Mikal Bridges. That game would not have been talked about the same way if it wasn't for Bridges' streak, because we see teams rest guys all the time. Now, usually it is a team that plans to be playing late into the spring and into the early summer, and that's not going to be the Brooklyn Nets. But they sat everybody but Cam Thomas and Bridges. Bridges obviously played because of his streak and then didn't go back into the game. That was what was so curious about it and really so infuriating if you're rooting for the team, because it was a winnable game. And then it's hard for Jacques Vaughn to get up there and go, you know, we got to dive on the floor. We got to make all these hustle plays when you totally give up on a game. So I don't think they're punting the season because of that. I think they were expecting to then win the next game against the Wizards. But their season has gone to a tailspin since then. They haven't won a game since then. They lost to the Wizards, who obviously they should beat. They lost to the Rockets last. They look lifeless. They look soulless right now. And they're stuck in a nebulous area, because like you said, Trista, they don't have their own draft pick, so there's no incentive to tank right now. At the same time, they're clearly not contenders, and their best assets are down the line. Like, I'm a fan of the Kevin Durant trade, all things considered. Once that red button is pushed, you're forced into making a move. I thought they did as well as you possibly could, getting Bridges and Johnson back, not to mention 4 first-round picks, pick swaps, whatever the rest of that package was. And if you look at the way Phoenix is constructed, very good chance they are bad when those picks come due. But they're still paying the debt on the Harden trade to Houston. They owe their pick to Houston this year. So you make the argument, I suppose, sell off everything and just try to get as many assets back, but that's probably not helping you in the short term. I think most likely they're keeping what they consider their core pieces, the twins. I don't know what the organization thinks about Cam Thomas because he's weirdly been jerked around where he's not starting, then he's starting, then he's not starting, then he's getting pulled after struggling a little bit when really you should be developing somebody like him over Spencer Dinwiddie, I guess, even though, Thomas has his flaws, but maybe they view him as a trade chip. I'm curious to see where they go, if they make a desperate move at the deadline or if they make more like marginal moves like trading Dinwiddie, who's an expiring, trading Claxton, who's an expiring, trading guys like Royce O'Neal and Dorian Finney-Smith, who might have value to contenders and not value to them right now, and still trying to build around those guys who are in their late 20s on good contracts.
Rob, what about the Grizzlies? Obviously now with Ja Morant back, they're playing a lot better. They're 5.5 games behind the Lakers for that 10 seed in the play-in game if that were to happen today. I think the tough thing with the Grizzlies for me, it's like if they end up making like a 9 or 10 seed, like who's the team that they would replace? But do you think maybe they're worth a bet long-term with Ja back now in the fold?
Hold on, I got to check my receipts and see what they say. I keep them. I still don't know what Ja Morant was talking about. Did anybody ever say he wasn't a good basketball player? I don't know what the case was. It's tough in the West and with all those teams bunched up when you start in that kind of hole. Now, the play-in tournament changes the whole game in a sense, because we were just talking about the Nets, and the Nets are, 5 games under 500 right now, but still in the play-in tournament, right? So your life raft is a lot longer nowadays. It's not like Leonardo DiCaprio from the Titanic. You're not getting kicked off that little piece of wood and sinking to the bottom of the ocean. You can hang on and cling on for longer, but I think that the Grizzlies started in a little bit too much of a hole to really get up there with
the got about a minute or so left here. We were talking about the Warriors earlier, 16-17. Draymond's going to be back with them soon. I mean, clearly they've gotten older. This is what happens with great teams. It's just the way the NBA works. Are they still a playoff team in your eyes? Are they just a play-in team in your eyes at this point? Because I feel like it's still really hard to write them off just given the history of this team.
Yeah, I think they're right on that bubble, 7, 8, 9, 10. But Steph Curry is, it's funny, all the Steph LeBron talk over the years, because now Curry is in the position LeBron was once in, where he's actually, of all the superstars in the league, probably asked to do more than anybody else when it comes to singularly carrying a team. Klay Thompson's not the same player he once was. Draymond Green can't stop choking people or, doing whatever he's doing to get himself suspended. You got, who else is on? Wiggins was benched. I mean, they got, Kuminga guy, little nice pieces, but they don't have another scorer, really. They don't have consistent secondary production, third production point-wise. A lot of that's coming from Steph. So I really just don't think they have the horses anymore to get it done.
Yeah, it's crazy, but all good things come to an end in the NBA, as we've seen. Robin Lundberg, SI Now. Appreciate
Thanks,
the time,
brother.
Man. Thanks for coming on.
You got it. You remember, everybody who talks about Michael Jordan never losing, when his dynasty ended, he quit to go play baseball.
Exactly. He dodged all the criticism. He knew what the damn legacy was going to be. It's a smart move. Thanks,
running
Robin.
He did.
He played baseball, came back, team was looking good again, and then you know what? Like, nobody ever talks about Jordan and the Wizards, by the way. Let's just bring that up. I remember those days.
Kelton Johnson balling.
Yeah. Yeah, he's having himself a night. I watched the Spurs, and I'm like, why aren't they better? Like, they have some talent. It's 93 all.
I got you, Tristan.
He's on a nationally televised game.
Going
after Giannis. It's BetMGM tonight.